ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरे कृष्ण वेलकम टू भागवत प्रवाह ऑनलाइन कोर्स ऑन द 11th कैंटो ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम In the last four episodes, we covered the first 20 chapters of the 11th canto and we began the Uddhava Gita from the 7th chapter of 11th canto and so far in Uddhava Gita, we have seen how Krishna elaborated on the section of 24 gurus and after that, Krishna also spoke about conditioned souls and liberated souls and the path of disentanglement from this material world. And Krishna also spoke the teachings of Hamsavatar to the four Kumaras. And Krishna also spoke the karma, then jnana or sankhya, then ashtanga yoga, various mystic perfections that one can attain by practicing this ashtanga yoga. And we have also seen Krishna's opulences in the 16th chapter. In the 17th, 18th chapters, we have seen how Krishna described this varnashrama system. And various rules and regulations to be followed by people of different varnas, brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and sudras. And we have also seen the duties and behavior of people in different ashramas, brahmachari, vanaprastha, grahastha and sannyas ashramas. And later we have seen a well elaborate description of bhakti yoga given by Krishna. And Krishna in all these chapters so far in Uddhava Gita, He has established bhakti to be the supreme spiritual path, superior to the path of karma, jnana and yoga. And whatever mystic perfections that we are attaining, that one might attain by Ashtanga Yoga, they are all material in nature and they are not very substantial from the perspective of one being a spirit soul. The spirit soul derives the greatest enjoyment and happiness in one's loving devotional service unto the Supreme Lord Krishna on a spiritual plane. And all other results of different Vedic paths they could be alluring, but many of them are on a material plane. But the ultimate spiritual benefit and spiritual happiness can be attained only by Bhakti Yoga. And in these chapters, Krishna also described who are the topmost devotees. Vrajavasis are the topmost devotees. And amongst Vrajavasis also, the gopis of Vrindavan are the topmost devotees. So we have seen all these topics in Uddhava Gita so far. And also, in the previous chapter, Krishna described various aspects of civilized life, universal aspects of civilized life. He gave definitions of determination, then he gave definition of modesty, then good, what is good, what is bad, everything he has spoken. And then finally, after defining various aspects of universal civilized life, Krishna said that ultimately one should not discriminate between good or bad qualities of people, knowing that they both are on a material plane. So one has to just stay aloof from this good and bad. One should not criticize someone's bad or good qualities. So then Uddhava asks, how can we not refer to good or bad, piety or sin? Because good and bad, discriminating between good and bad is given in the Vedas, which are your own words and prescriptions and prohibitions, what is auspicious, what is inauspicious, what is good and what is bad is mentioned in the Vedas. How can we not refer to them? Then Krishna spoke about karma, jnana and bhaktis. So karma means the qualification for karma is too much of attachment. The qualification for jnana is too much of detachment. But the qualification for bhakti is a balanced attachment and detachment. One should not be too attached, one should not be too detached from material things. One should have the balance and one should have the necessary maturity to engage material things in Krishna's service and spiritualize matter. A jnani may think that everything is matter, let me be detached. Karmi may think that this matter can give me lot of enjoyment, let me be attached. But bhakta will reject material things like a jnani, but also accept material things and use, like a karmi, but use those things in Krishna's service. So, but and he will also have a lot of faith and eagerness to hear Krishna Katha. And that's the quality of an advanced devotee. But the quality of a neophyte devotee is that he has interest in Krishna Katha and he worships Krishna, but still he has some past impressions or bad habits by which he may sometimes indulge in sense gratification, but he doesn't do it with eagerness, but he does them only out of habit, but he feels guilty for indulging in sense gratification. But that struggle is good. Krishna will reciprocate with that struggle and help that devotee to overcome that shortcoming or anartha and that struggle, and then eventually bring him to greatest stage of love of Godhead. So now Krishna continues to describe, and Krishna also described that human life is very rare and one has to utilize that human life properly by engaging in bhakti yoga under the guidance of a spiritual master and taking shelter of scriptures. We have seen that drdeha madhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karana dharam, all this we have discussed. So now we will begin the 21st chapter. So Krishna continues to describe the Vedic path. He says piety means steadiness in one's own position. Sin means deviation from that position. So there are so many prescribed duties and activities for a civilized human being, and to stick to them and practice them sincerely is piety, and to deviate from them is sin. So Krishna defines that. So one cannot avoid good and bad as long as one is in this material plane. So Krishna says that till one becomes such an advanced devotee, one has to discriminate between good and bad on a material plane and then follow these Vedic instructions. Then Krishna describes what are the standards of purity and impurity, piety and impiety, auspiciousness and inauspiciousness, good and bad. So Krishna says, what is a contaminated place? He says that a place where there are meat eaters, where the place where regulative principles are broken, such places are contaminated places. What is a good place? The place where Brahmanas stay, the place where Vaishnavas stay, a temple, that's a pure place. What is appropriate time? So time which is very suitable for spiritual activities which is very conducive for achieving suitable paraphernalia for good activities, that is appropriate time. And inappropriate time is time which impedes the performance of one's duty, that is inappropriate time, inauspicious time. Then objects and agents for purification, then standards for purification, personal purification by bathing or meditating on the Lord. So like that Krishna describes various standards of purity and purification. So path of liberation is by refraining from material enjoyment, one will be freed. That's the path of liberation. And path of fall down is just like trees are cut down by conditioned souls sometimes. So conditioned souls are cut down by the laws of natures. So now a human being may cut a tree because tree is helpless, but the laws of nature will cut down the human being also. Human being cannot stay within the human body for a long time. He can stay only as long as his karma allows him to be so. So a human being, a conditioned soul, may accept sense objects, he may get attached, he may become lusty, he will quarrel, and he becomes angry if his lust is not satisfied, then he will be plunged into darkness and he will lose intelligence. So like that, a conditioned soul, because of this karmakanda, his inclination for sense enjoyment and following karmakandic sections of the Vedas to derive that sense enjoyment, he will undergo a lot of misery. So then these karmakanda sections are there in Vedas only. How can these Vedas cheat people? We are saying that by following karmakandic principles, various rituals, rituals for sense enjoyment, one will be entangled. But why such things are there within the Vedas? One may question like that. Krishna says that these karmakandic sections of the Vedas that prescribe various rituals for sense enjoyment or for going to heavenly planets, etc. So such karmakandic sections are not meant for the ultimate good of people. We have discussed in Nimin Avayogendra Samvad, ultimate good for people in general is caused by Bhakti Yoga, not by this Karmakanda. So it's not for ultimate good, but they have their utility to entice common people to attract the attention of materialistic and selfish people who have no inclination for spirituality, these karmakandic sections are mentioned in the Vedas, so that if a human being, if a conditioned soul aligns oneself with these karmakandic sections and regulates his sense enjoyment, eventually he will develop some intelligence to understand that, why am I regulating sense enjoyment? Because it is bad. If it is good, there should not be any regulation. So, chanting the holy names of the Lord is good. There are no regulations. One can chant at any time, at any place one can chant. But meat eating has regulation. Oh, one can eat meat only in this prescribed method and so day, by giving the animal as a sacrifice in front of Kali or whatever. There are so many descriptions, so many prescriptions. So, one, by following this karmakandic Vedic path, one may fulfill one's sense gratificatory desire. At the same time, by being thoughtful and introspective, one will come to a stage of understanding that sense gratification itself is bad. Just like a sugar candy or a chocolate is not good for a small child, and the child's health is not very good. But the father wants to give medicine to the child, but the child says, I want that sugar candy. So father may sometimes give a chocolate to the child, although it is not very good for the child, so that the child can take medicine. Otherwise the child is so adamant that he is not taking medicine at all. If you give me chocolate, then only I will take medicine. The child may think like this. So then father may give a sugar candy just to give medicine to him. Or father may mix, the mother may mix some sugar within the bitter medicine and then give it to the child. Or within a sweet, they may just insert the medicine tablet and then give it to the child. Something like that. But medicine is very important for the child. So, similarly, some sense gratification may be allowed according to certain Vedic sections. But ultimately, to educate the conditioned soul that this is not good for you. That's why we are regulating it. So, all these things Krishna describes. And in the 22nd chapter, we completed 21st chapter. We gave a quick summary of 21st chapter. We will enter the 22nd chapter. So, in the previous chapter, Uddhava understood the meaning of Karmakanda. He said, okay, Karmakanda, I understood the purpose of Karmakandic sections of the Vedas. What about Jnanakanda? Uddhava has this doubt. So, Krishna describes Jnanakanda or Sankhya within the 22nd chapter. He enumerates the material elements. We already discussed this Sankhya in the teachings of Lord Kapila, especially in the 3rd canto, 26th chapter. So, Krishna describes this Sankhya philosophy. So, Sankhya basically is enumeration of material elements. There are so many material elements. We have seen in the creation chart that so many material elements manifest. We will see that again. So, some count these material elements as in different numbers. Some say there are 28 elements. Some say there are 26 elements. Some say there are 25 elements. Some say there are 13 elements. Some say there are 11. Some say 9. Some say 6. Some say 4. Some say 7. So, there are different counts. So, Uddhava asks, as a part of Sankhya, or enumeration of material elements, or analysis of matter and spirit also, one may count the elements in various ways. So, which count is right? Uddhava asks Krishna. Then Krishna says, all counts are right. Basically, different people count from different perspectives, from their own viewpoint, but all of them are okay, correct. Krishna says that. So, the reason for difference is the Lord's own mystic potency, the Lord's Maya. Means, because of the influence of the Supreme Lord's Maya, different philosophers may count the material elements in different ways, but ultimately they are counting the Lord's elements only. So, let us see. The Vaishnava philosophers count the elements as 28 or 26, because they count, one is like this, Mahatattva is there, then false ego, then 5 gross elements, and then 5 subtle elements. 5 gross elements are earth, water, fire, ether. 5 subtle elements are tanmatras, are this touch, form, taste, smell, etc. So, they are there, and then there are 5 knowledge senses, and there are 5 5 working senses, total 10 senses are there. So these are all counted. But these Vaishnava philosophers count the Jiva also as one of the elements, and the Supreme Lord also is a separate element. That's why their count is sometimes 26 or 28. So basically, in their count, they distinguish between the Supreme Lord and the Jiva. But Mayavad philosophers, Mayavad Sankhya, they consider that there is no qualitative difference between the Supreme Lord and the Jiva. Both are one element. They consider like that. So we know this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Yes, the Jiva is equivalent to the Lord in quality. Both are Satchidananda. But the Jiva is different from the Lord in quantity. That we know. Because the Lord is like great ocean, and the Jiva or the living entity is just like a drop of ocean. The Lord is like big fire, and the Jiva is like just a spark of fire that can emanate only little heat and little light. So the fire can emanate so much of heat and light. So there is qualitative oneness, but there is quantitative difference. So that is that when you consider only oneness of qualitative oneness, that is there is Abheda, that is Abheda Tattva. And there are the statements that emphasize the qualitative oneness between the Lord and the Jivas, they are called Abheda Vakyas. There is no difference between them. And the statements of scriptures that describe the difference between the Lord and the living entities, they are called Bheda Vakyas. There are Bheda Vakyas, there are Abheda Vakyas. Bheda Vakyas describe that the Lord and the living entities are different. And Abheda Vakyas describe the Lord and the living entities are same. But this both are correct. So here they are seeing the quality and here they are seeing the quantity. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reconciled both. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So the Supreme Lord and the Jiva, or means his energies, are simultaneously one and different. And because the energy cannot exist without the energetic person. And energetic person has no meaning without energy. Thus there is oneness. There is energy and energetic person are one. But at the same time, they are different. So energetic person can stay there and the energies can function according to the will of this person. So they can differently act also. So that's how they are different. So, but we cannot always understand this simultaneous oneness and difference. That's why the word Achintya is added. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So Vaishnava Sankhya describes the qualitative difference between the Lord and the living entity, and they count them separately. But Mayavad Sankhya counts them as one element. That's why their count is only 25, while Vaishnavas count them as 28. But there are other elements are there, like false ego, mahatattva. Sometimes they are counted, they are not counted, the material elements. Some materialistic Sankhya people count as 24. Some people count as 17, 16. There are different counts. You can see in the table. There's a very elaborate description. So then Krishna further replies by analyzing the qualities of Prakriti and Purusha. So Prakriti undergoes change, but Purusha does not undergo change. Prakriti takes on various forms, but the Purusha also has so many forms, but ultimately they are all spiritual forms. Then Prakriti is dependent on the Lord, but the Lord is independent of Prakriti. Then Prakriti is revealed by another. Means someone else has to reveal this is the quality of material nature. But Purusha is self-revealing. He himself will manifest. So in this way, the Prakriti and the Purusha are different. Means the Supreme Lord and the material universe are different. So then Krishna also defines reincarnation, birth and death. So reincarnation means when the mind, which is shaped by karma, travels from one body to another body, that is called reincarnation. And when the soul starts identifying with a new body, new material body, that is birth. When the soul's tenure within an old material body is finished, it is called death. So these are definitions. And there are 9 stages of a body, material body. One is impregnation. First the father will inject the seed into the mother's womb. So that is impregnation. Then gestation means development of embryo. Third is birth. Fourth is infancy. Fifth is childhood. sixth is youth, seventh is middle age, eighth old age, ninth death. These are the various stages of a material body, right from conception till death time. So, but all these are stages are not there for a spirit soul. So, one needs to understand this birth and death. One needs to also understand that the transmigration of a living entity from one body to another body happens because of one's karma, because of the influence of the material modes. If somebody is influenced predominantly by mode of goodness, he may go to heavenly planets. If someone is instigated or influenced by material mode of passion, then he will remain as a human being in the earthly planet. And if one is instigated by modes of ignorance or tamoguna, he could become a ghost or he could take birth in animal kingdom. So these are various ways in which conditioned souls are influenced by material modes, and accordingly they will attain different destinations. So ultimately the cause of bondage is that the jiva has a lot of attraction to enjoy separately from the Supreme Lord Krishna, and thus is entangled in Maya. So then Krishna finally says that, so you have to give up this sense gratification. One has to be detached from sense gratification that prevents one from realizing oneself. We are souls, we are not material bodies. And when can we realize this? When we detach ourselves from bodily sense gratification. As long as there is attachment to sense gratification on a bodily plane, one cannot come to the conception of one's being the spirit soul. So Krishna says, give up that sense gratification. Don't try to enjoy material senses. Don't indulge in sense gratification too much. So a person devoid of material enjoyment, even though he has been insulted, there are so many things that Krishna says. Sometimes somebody may be insulted or threatened, or he may be attacked, or he may be threatened by other people. But still, someone who is totally on a spiritual plane is unaffected by all these things. We have seen the example of Jada Bharat in the 5th canto of Bhagavatam. Some dacoits wanted to sacrifice Jada Bharat, treating him like a man animal. They wanted to cut the head of Jada Bharat in front of Mother Kali, so that they were thinking that Kali can give them so many powers to steal better if they sacrifice a human being like Jada Bharat. So Jada Bharat was totally aloof. So he did not protest. As the dacoits were taking him, he just went along with them. As the head priest of the dacoits was trying to kill Jada Bharat, Jada Bharat did not protest. But Kali could not tolerate this offense to a Vaishnava. So the deity of Mother Kali just got, it was broken. And Kali just jumped out of the altar along with her associates, the Pishachis and other people, and she started beheading all these dacoits and protected Jada Bharat. And Jada Bharat was neutral, he just continued his wanderings. So one cannot imitate such high stage. So Jada Bharat was not affected by any insults. Jada Bharat was not affected by any threatening or fears. Although he was being killed by some dacoits, he did not protest at all. He was totally neutral. He was absorbed in spiritual consciousness. He did not protest. So that's a very advanced stage. One cannot imitate that stage. An average conditioned soul, a normal soul, or even a struggling spiritual seeker also would sometimes get hurt, and sometimes get affected by insults or by bad words or by harsh words. So one cannot imitate that stage. So that's why Uddhava is also asking, how can I understand this? How can one come to that such a great stage? Even a learned person also will get affected when someone offends him. So how could to tolerate other people's offenses? Now, some people whimsically criticize us, some people inappropriately behave with us, and some people unnecessarily torture us and trouble us. How can we not be affected by this? How can, especially receiving harsh words and insulting words from other people is very painful. Physical pain one can tolerate, but mental pain is like even more higher. So how to tolerate all that? How can I understand this? Uddhava asked like this. Then in the 23rd chapter, Krishna speaks the story of Avanti Brahman. He says that there is one story of a great Brahmana from the kingdom of Avanti. The place is called Avanti. That's why he's called Avanti Brahmana, a Brahmana from Avanti. So, from his story we can learn how not to get affected by insults or inappropriate words or harsh words or rude behavior of other people. So, Krishna says that no one can resettle the mind after being insulted by other people. So, harsh words are more painful than sharp arrows. So, physical pain definitely is troublesome, but sometimes words are much more painful than arrows. So, there is one very good story of a Brahmana who became a sannyasi later. We can learn from his detachment. So, Krishna speaks. Once there was a rich Brahmana. This Brahmana is very rich. He was doing business also. He was doing commerce. But he was very miserly. He is lusty also. He is greedy. He is angry also. This Brahmana, Avanti Brahmana, in the beginning. So, he was devoid of dharma and kama. He would not do any household rituals also. He would not offer any oblations to forefathers or demigods. His family became very disgusted with him. They became even inimical towards him. And even the presiding deities of his family, they also became angry with him. He is not offering any puja. And he lost all his piety. Gradually, this rich Brahmana lost all his wealth also, eventually. So, that wealth is taken away by thieves, relatives. He was very miserly, keeping that wealth very safely. But thieves will come and steal that wealth. And some relatives will come and take it for some other thing. And somehow by the government, and by time factor and by the will of providence, eventually he became a very poor person. So because he does not have wealth, his family ignored him even more, and the society ignored him, and people started ridiculing him, people started speaking in a very harsh manner with him. Earlier, already people were disgusted with him, but at least when he has wealth, people are still maintaining connection with him. But once he lost everything, people started ridiculing him even more. We discussed in the 10th canto, last chapter, Yasyahamanugrihnami harishyetadhanam shanaihi. So, when the Supreme Lord Krishna wants to show some special mercy on a devotee, the Lord may take away all his wealth. And when his wealth is taken away, then that person could be abandoned by his family members and friends and relatives and his own children also and wife also. Then, having no other shelter, that devotee will take exclusive shelter of Krishna. So, thus, sometimes Krishna can favor a devotee by making that devotee very poor. Of course, if the Lord is very confident that my devotee will not get distracted by material wealth, the Lord can bestow material wealth also. So, you can stay happily in this material world, and after quitting this life, you can come back to spiritual world also. Krishna says that to very advanced devotees. But if the Lord sees that this wealth is distracting my devotee from devotional service, then I will take it away from him. So, Avanti Brahmana, potentially he was a devotee, but now he lost all the wealth. So, a feeling of renunciation arose from his heart. So, he started meditating on the Lord. And a feeling of bhakti came in his heart. Then he started contemplating. He thought that I have tormented myself out of greed for wealth. And miser's money causes a lot of self-torment. All my good qualities have been destroyed by my miserliness and greed. And he says in the 17th shloka, Arthasya sadhane siddhem Utkarshe rakshane vyayem nasopabhoga ayasaham trasas chinta bhramodranam. So, wealth can cause anxiety at all stages. He says, arthasya sadhane siddhe, while you are endeavoring to accumulate wealth, means while attaining the wealth, while expanding that wealth, increasing that wealth, while protecting that wealth, while spending that money, and while losing that money, while enjoying that money, in all these stages, there is anxiety. While spending that money, you always feel that, oh, am I spending more? Am I spending less? Or sometimes you are enjoying that money. Oh, maybe my money gets exhausted. You are protecting that money. Maybe somebody may steal this money. You are accumulating that money. You have to undergo a lot of anxiety and hard work. So like that, in all stages of accumulating wealth or spending wealth or enjoying wealth or losing wealth or doing anything in relation to money, there is anxiety. There is little bit of anxiety or more anxiety. The degree of anxiety matters, but anxiety exists. So he says that there are so many problems out of because of greed for wealth. In the 18th and 19th shlokas, Avanti Brahmana enumerate 15 problems because of greed for wealth. He says, steyam himsanritam dambhah kamah krodhah smayo madah bhedo vairam avivasah avishwasah sampradha vyasanani cha ete panchadashanartham hyartham moolamatanrinam tasmadanartham arthakhyam shreyorthi duratastyajet. So, in these two shlokas, Avanti Brahmana enumerates 15 kinds of problems because of greed for wealth. He says, steyam, theft. Himsa means violence. Anritam means speaking lies, untruth. Then dambha, dambha is pride or duplicity. Kama, lust. Then krodha, anger. Smaya, perplexity. Then mada, pride. Then bheda means quarreling. And vairam, enmity. Avishwasa, faithlessness. Then sampradha, vyasananicha. Then many other things. Faithlessness, envy, and dangers caused by opposite gender, gambling, intoxication. So all these things will manifest in a person who is very greedy for wealth. So if you are greedy, sometimes one can become untruthful. If one is greedy, one can even steal from others. If one is greedy, one could become violent also to accumulate money. So, greed for wealth can bring 15 kinds of problems. So, one should remain aloof. Shreyo arthi duratastyajet, duratastyajet. The realization of Avanti Brahmana is, let me stay away from wealth. So, he had to undergo the experience of losing wealth to get detached from wealth. So, a feeling of renunciation and detachment and devotion also arose in Avanti Brahman. You can see the next slide, 20 and 21 shlokas. In these two shlokas, Avanti Brahman says, for one single coin, whether it is rupee or dollar or whatever may be the currency, for one single coin, gold coin or silver coin, whatever may be the currency, relatives can become enemies. Thick friends can become lifelong enemies also. That's the nature of material wealth. In the 22nd shloka, Avanti Brahman says, labdha, labdha janmavara prarthyam, manusham tadvijagratyam, tadanadritya ye swartham, ghananti yantya shubha, shubham gatim. So in this shloka, Avanti Brahman says that this human birth is extremely rare. He says, labdha, labdha janma amara prarthyam. Amara means immortal beings. Immortal means one who is long lived. Like no one can become immortal or deathless within this material body. So basically this ama, martya, amara word is used to indicate people who are residing in heaven. Even the heavenly denizens also desire a human birth on this earthly planet. Why? Because one can attain liberation from this material existence, from this human body, very easily. Because demigods are involved in excessive sense enjoyment. And in the lower planets or lower species, there is a lot of distress. So one cannot think of Krishna in too much of distress or too much of enjoyment. But in human life, there is a mixture of happiness and distress. So one can easily worship the Lord. So that's why labdha janma amara prarthyam, even heavenly residents, demigods also pray for human birth. So now I attain that human birth. After attaining a human birth, if someone is unnecessarily greedy for wealth or sense gratification, then he is just wasting human life. So the human life is meant for self-realization. And if one does not utilize human life for self-realization, but uses for sense gratification, then he is just wasting that opportunity. That's what he says. In the 23rd shloka, he says, Svarga pavarga yordvaram prapya lokam imam puman dravideko nushajjeta martyo anarthasya dhamani. So no one should get attached to material prosperity in a human life. Immortal being, he achieved human life, which is gateway for both liberation and entanglement. One can go to heaven, one can go to hell, one can go to spiritual world from this human form of life. So better of all these options is going to the spiritual world by performing bhakti. If one is greedy for material wealth, we don't know. One can be liberated, entering animal species. So in this way, one should not waste human life, he says. Then one should not, one who does not distribute wealth to other people in a charitable manner, they may fall down also. So one should discriminate persons. Discriminating persons utilize money and youth and strength for perfection. So one should utilize one's wealth also for attaining perfection. So in this way, Avanti Brahmana introspects and he comes to a conclusion that good that I have lost all material wealth, I can take exclusive shelter of Krishna. So finally he says in the 28th shloka, Nuranam me bhagavam stushtaham sarva deva mayo harihim yena neto dasham etam nirvedas chatmanah plavahan. So now that I am getting detached from this material wealth and material enjoyment, I can understand that the Supreme Lord must be showing some mercy on me. Without His mercy, how can I be detached like this? How can I develop feelings of renunciation without the Supreme Lord's mercy, or without having pleased Him directly or indirectly somehow at some point of my life? So he was thinking like that. He was acknowledging the Lord's grace upon him for developing this feelings of detachment. Then Avanti Brahman has broken all the knots of attachment in his life, and then he became totally devoted to the Lord. And common people, then he wandered in self-control. So he restrained himself from external activities and he just started wandering like an avadhut. Then he visited so many places just to survive. He would just beg and then eat some food. But some rowdy persons, they started dishonoring him, and some people took away his sannyas rod. He became like a sannyasi. He took the sannyas rod also. So, but some people just took away his sannyas rod. Some people took away his pot. Some people took away his deer skin. Some people took away his beads and torn clothes. So people started ridiculing him. People started playing with him and behaving disrespectfully with him. They would not even allow him to eat also. Some simple, sinful people are there. They would not allow him to eat properly. They may throw dirt when he is eating. But still he tolerated all such insults. So they would try to disrespect even his Maunavrata also. He is silently sitting somewhere. They try to provoke him and make him speak. So Avanti Brahmana has become, earlier he had been very harsh with other people. He has been very miserly and greedy and angry earlier. And now he is also receiving unpleasant dealings from other people. So now people would criticize him. People would call him as a hypocrite. Hey, he is just maintaining a vow of silence, but he is a very dangerous person. The people would doubt him. They would ridicule him. So people sometimes would pass foul air on him also. So in this way, he was being mistreated in various ways. But Avanti Brahmana had a contemplation. He sang. In the next shloka, you can see there is some chart also. Nayam jano me sukha dukha hetur na devatatma graha karma kalaha manah param karanama mananti samsara chakram parivarta yetyat. So he says that nayam jano me sukha dukha hetur. Although all these people are misbehaving with me and mistreating me in various ways, I don't blame them. Because nayam janome sukha dukkha hetor, these jana these people are not the cause of my happiness or distress. They are not the cause, number one. Number two, na devatatma graha karma kalaha, devatas means demigods are not the cause of my distress. And atma, my own self, my own soul or body is not the cause of my distress. Then graha, graha means bad planets. They are not the cause of my distress. Then not only cause of distress, not a cause of happiness also. Sukha dukkha hetur. And he says, my karma is also not the cause. Kala is also not cause. Manaha param karanamamananti. My material mind itself is the cause of all these distresses. So, I am undergoing a lot of distresses because of my mind. When the mind starts identifying oneself with the material body, whenever the material body is affected, we get affected. But if the mind, within the mind, if we don't identify oneself with the body, then there is no reason to get affected. So when that identification is there within the material mind, then there is a lot of distress or happiness on a material plane. So he says this. So material mind creates various statuses of life, different designations, different identifications. So material mind is influenced by material modes. You can see that picture where the three modes are just playing with this pulling strings of these living entities. So within the material body, there is super soul and there is soul. They are both are like two birds on a tree. But the soul bird is enjoying the fruits, but the Supreme Lord, super soul bird, is just witnessing the activities. So one has to just focus on the super soul, meditate on the Supreme Lord and control one's mind from material enjoyment. So it's very important to control the mind because mind is very strong. Mind can cause liberation, mind can cause bondage also. So when one controls the mind, one can become master of senses. Because we engage in so many material activities through our senses. And our sense indulgence will create a material impression in the mind. And that will increase our desire to indulge the senses in material activities again. So one has to control the mind. Then finally, Avanti Brahmana declares his determination in devotional service through this beautiful shloka, 57th shloka. And even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, he chanted this shloka while attempting to go to Vrindavan. Etam sa asthaya paratmanishtham adhyasitam purvatamair maharshibhi aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundang ghrinisheva yaiva etam sa asthaya paratmanishtha. So this is the real activity of a sannyasi, of a person who is in renounced order of life. Etam sa asthaya, what is that? Paratmanishtha. Paratmanishtha means being totally fixed up in the process of devotional service unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. Paratmanishtha. Nishtha means being very steady and being very rooted and fixed up in one's bhakti. Adhyasitam purvatamair maharshibhir. And how can one develop such a great determination in bhakti unto the Lord? By following the footsteps of great devotees, ancestors. Purvatamair maharshibhi, great maharshis, great sages have taught us the path of bhakti. We have to follow in their footsteps. And he says, aham tarishyami durantaparam. By doing so, means by practicing bhakti, following the footsteps of great devotees, one can easily cross over this material existence. He says that, aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukunda angri nisheva yaiva. I can cross over this tama, means darkness or ignorance, ocean of nescience, by mukunda angri seva, service to the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda. He became very determined. So in this way, Avanti Brahmana perfected his life. Although he has been tormented by harsh words and insulting words and mistreatment and misbehavior by other people, still he tolerated all of them. He only considered that my mind itself is making me undergo a lot of material happiness or distress. So better I be detached from this material mind and focus my mind on the Supreme Lord Krishna with determination, following the footsteps of Acharyas. So that completes the 23rd chapter. Now we will discuss 24th chapter. So 24th chapter describes that it is said that the cause of suffering was the self-identity in the subtle body predominated by mind. That's what Avanti Brahmana established. He says that Nayam Janome Sukha Dukha Heto. He says Manaha Param Karanamamananti. Mind, material mind is the cause of all material experiences. So the false identity disappears when one distinguishes the soul from the body. So that is the Sankhya philosophy. So in this Sankhya episode, in the 24th chapter of 11th canto, in the part of Uddhava Gita, so Lord Krishna describes the creation of the universe. So I shall describe Sankhya, and you please understand this Sankhya philosophy, which is enumeration of material elements, analysis of matter and spirit, and by understanding this Sankhya, one can give up material duality and identity with this material body. So the absolute truth is the source of both the living entity and prakriti, means material nature. So the living entity desires material enjoyment, and the Supreme Lord sanctions that material enjoyment because the living entity is so bent upon enjoying. So the Lord sanctions that enjoyment, and the prakriti facilitates that enjoyment. So the creation happens in this way. From the bodily pores of Mahavishnu, the universe first emanates first in the form of a small seed called Pradhana, and by the influence of time, that Pradhana transforms into Mahatattva, and that Mahatattva transforms into Ahankara, and Ahankara within three material modes, Sattvaguna, Rajoguna and Tamoguna, gives rise to various elements. So the Ahankara within ignorance will give rise to five tanmatras and the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether. And Ahankara in mode of passion gives rise to the 10 senses and intelligence. And Ahankara in the mode of goodness gives rise to mind and the sense devatas or the demigods. So this is the process in which the material elements manifest. And then the Lord describes the qualities of all these material elements. And the destruction of this material world also happens in a different manner. So in the reverse manner. So the gross elements are merged into subtle elements, and eventually this whole material world is wound up within the Mahavishnu's body. So that completes the 24th chapter, the analysis of matter and spirit as a part of Sankhya philosophy. Now we will enter the 25th chapter, where the Supreme Lord Krishna describes the three modes of material nature and beyond. So there are three material modes: mode of goodness, mode of passion and mode of ignorance. And in mode of goodness, the qualities of mode of goodness are sense control, mind control, tolerance, determination, austerity, truthfulness, mercy, peacefulness. These are all various qualities manifested by a person who is in mode of goodness. And a person who is in mode of passion has intense material desire, great endeavor, audacity, dissatisfaction, even in gain, and false pride, and praying for material advancement. So these are all various qualities in mode of passion. And in mode of ignorance, a person exhibits a lot of anger, greed, he speaks lies, he is very violent, and he has chronic fatigue, he is very quarrelsome, lamentation, delusion, all these qualities are manifested in mode of ignorance. Now, when somebody is influenced by a combination of material modes, so he will behave in multiple, in different ways. So how to realize that a person is predominated by certain mode? So if we can understand that a person is influenced by mode of goodness by his quality of self-control. And if somebody is very lusty, we understand that he is predominated by the mode of passion. And if someone is very angry and very aggressive, we understand that he is influenced by mode of ignorance. And once, sometimes the process of devotional service also could be affected by the material modes. Means bhakti is beyond modes, but the practitioner of bhakti could be affected by material modes, and then he can perform bhakti in different ways. So a person who worships with devotion by offering his prescribed duties to the Lord without material attachment is said to be in mode of goodness. means he's performing bhakti in mode of goodness. And a person who worships the Lord by his prescribed duties with the hope of gaining material benefit, such a person is said to be doing bhakti in mode of passion. And a person who performs bhakti to commit violence against other people, such people are in mode of ignorance. So, in this way, Krishna describes various conditions of a person who is influenced by material modes, and his activities and his performance of bhakti is also influenced by material modes. So, and then in goodness, one is in wakefulness, and in passion, one gets into sleep while dreaming, and dreamless sleep, deep sleep, is in ignorance, and the state of being beyond modes is Turiya stage. Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti and Turiya stages are there, and Jagrat Swapna is wakeful state which is in mode of goodness, then Swapna, dreamy state which is in mode of passion, then Sushupti, deep sleep, is in mode of ignorance, and beyond these three stages is the Turiya stage, when someone is totally beyond the material modes. And in mode of goodness, one can be elevated to the higher planets. In mode of passion, one can stay in this human planet. And in mode of ignorance, one can be degraded to lower species. And after leaving the body, one can go to heavenly planets in mode of goodness, and one can remain in this world of human beings in the mode of passion, and one can even go to hell if one is predominated by mode of ignorance. And even prescribed duties and knowledge and the living places, residences, and the performer in action, the faith, food, happiness, all this could be influenced by material modes, as Lord Krishna also describes in the Bhagavad Gita. So, 33rd shloka of this chapter. How to conquer these modes, and how can one transcend these material modes? That is possible by practicing bhakti yoga. Tasmad dehamimam labdhva jnana vijnana sambhavam gunasangam vinirdhuya mam bhajantu vichakshanah. So one can transcend the material modes by doing bhajan, by performing devotional service unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. One can transcend the lower modes of passion and ignorance, and one can eventually come to the mode of goodness, and from goodness one can transcend all the three modes. In the 36th shloka, Krishna describes, Jivo jiva vinirmuktom gunaischasya sambhavaihi mayaiva brahmana purnom nabhair nabahir nantarascharet. So one can experience the Supreme Lord Krishna's form by practicing the process of bhakti yoga. So in this way, Krishna describes and analyzes the three material modes in the 25th chapter of 11th canto. In the 26th chapter, Krishna describes another important episode. So Krishna said that one should attentively worship the Supreme Lord, worship Him, to get relieved of the association of material modes. Of all the kinds of bad association, the greatest bad association is the association with the opposite gender for sense gratification. We have discussed in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam the story of Pururava, who was so obsessed and infatuated with his relationship with Urvasi, a heavenly damsel. So Pururava was so attached to Urvasi, and they stayed for some time, and because of Pururava's certain mistake, Urvasi just left his association, and then she went to Gandharva Loka. Then eventually Pururava performed a sacrifice and worshipped the Lord, and then eventually he went to the planet of Urvasi and enjoyed with her for such a long time. But Urvasi's association and enjoying with Urvasi could not satisfy Pururava. So Pururava was totally frustrated after enjoying with Urvasi for such a long time. Although he was longing for her association, but still after associating with her, he realized that this sense gratification, this material enjoyment is not substantial. It cannot satisfy my soul. So in such frustration, Pururava sang a song. That song is called Aila Gita. So that is the that is described in the 26th chapter of this 11th canto. And the background of Pururava we have just discussed, Krishna also enumerates that. And after that, Ailagita. Ailagita is the song sung by Pururava. Pururava is also called Aila because he was the son of Ila and Buddha. So he says that, I have been attached to this heavenly damsel, Urvasi, and my heart has been completely polluted by lust, and I have wasted a lot of my valuable time. Although this Urvasi herself spoke about the nature of polluted women to Pururava, still he could not follow her advice. Still he was so obsessed and infatuated with attachment to her. So in the 8th shloka, Pururava says that, she cheated me. I didn't notice sunrise and sunset because of my attachment to her. So although I was a Chakravarti, I am Naradeva Shikhamani, I am like the crushed jewel of all kings, I am a great emperor on this planet, still I was so attached to her. Although I am Naradeva Shikhamani, I am a Chakravarti, an emperor, still I have become like a pet animal, Krida Mruga, a toy animal in the hands of Urvasi. And I have become like a blade of grass in front of this woman, just begging her for some sense gratification. And just like a male donkey will go to female donkey for sense enjoyment, and sometimes this male donkey, male ass, has to get some kicks from the female donkey when he is so obsessed with sense enjoyment. So then he says, Kim vidyaya kim tapasam, kim tyagena shrutena va, kim vivikteena maunena stribhiryasya manohritam. So what is the use of one's vidya? Vidya means education. Tapasa, austerity. Tyaga means charity. Shrutena, education, knowledge. Kim vivikteena maunena, one's mauna vrata or many various other vows that one takes. All these are useless if one's mind is totally absorbed in the thoughts of opposite gender. So, stribhiryasya manohritam, when mind is stolen by the thoughts of opposite gender, what is the use of being so advanced in education and austerity? So, then such a person who is addicted to sense gratification with the opposite gender is compared to a bullock or an ass or a jackass. So, finally, Pururava gets two great realizations. Number one, lust is insatiable. If we supply drops of ghee to the fire, hoping that this fire will be satisfied and it will mitigate it, that's foolishness. So the more we supply drops of ghee to the fire, the more fire will start blazing. So lust is insatiable. So one should only try to restrain oneself from lusty indulgence. One should not just think that, okay, if I just indulge in this lust, this will be satiated. So lust is insatiable. Second realization that Pururava got was, only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, can help me come out of this lusty thoughts. So I take responsibility. I should not blame Urvasi. So it's my attachment to Urvasi that made me foolish like this, not that I should blame her. So I am confused. I am totally attracted to Urvasi, and she even gave me good counsel also, that it's not proper on my part to be attached to her so much. I should be focusing on my responsibilities as an emperor. But I could not listen to her because of my infatuation. Then I am so focused on fulfilling my bodily desires. He says in the 19th and 20th shlokas, Pitroha kim svam nu bharyayaha swami nognehe swagridhrayoha kimatmanaha kim suhrudam itiyo navasishyate. So in this shloka, he says that this body belongs to whom? This body belongs to the father or mother, because they gave birth to the body. Is this body a property of the employer who gives salary and maintains this body? Or is this body the property of Agni that burns the body at the end of one's life? When somebody dies, he may be burnt to ashes, or his body may be buried in the ground, earth. So does it belong to earth? So, or does it belong to oneself? So does it belong to some relatives or friends or wife? So who enjoys with this body? So whom does this body belong to? So this body belongs to so many people, but ultimate utility of a human body is in utilizing it for Krishna's service. He gets this deep realization. So being absorbed in sense gratification is like, is the life of a worm or an insect. So, but there is one solution to this. By constant interaction with sense objects, the mind constantly meditates on those sense objects. But if the sense objects are out of our sight, they could be out of our mind. Dhyayato vishayan pumsan sankasteshopajayate. So when the mind is constantly contemplating on sense objects, attraction develops, attachment develops, and lust increases. But if my mind stops meditating on the sense objects, then one need not pass through the remaining stages. But how will the mind stop meditating on the sense objects? We should stop feeding the senses. So lust is there in the senses also and in the mind also. But if the senses are restrained from sense objects, then one can avoid having those lusty impressions in the mind. So out of sight, out of mind. So one can fast, one can make the senses fast from sense gratification. That's a way of coming out of this material illusion. So, and one can transcend this sense gratification by taking association of devotees. And one should fix their minds on the Supreme Lord Krishna. So Krishna finally gives this solution. One should take shelter of Vaishnava Sangha. One should take shelter of Krishna's devotees. And one should faithfully hear Krishna's glories and chant Krishna's glories. And one can be completely out of this this enemy of lust and sense gratification. These are the realizations of Aila. So by sincere hearing and chanting of the holy names of the Lord and by sincere hearing of Krishna's pastimes, so one can purify one's heart of these contaminations of lust, envy, anger, pride and greed. In the second canto also there is a beautiful shloka. Pravishtah karana randhrena svanam bhavasaroruham dhunodishamalam krishna salilasya yathasharat. Pravishtah karana randhrena. When the sound vibrations of Srimad Bhagavatam enter the ear holes of a sincere hearer, then Krishna will enter through the sound vibrations into the heart of such sincere hearer, bhavasaroruham, and he will sit in the lotus emotions of that heart of the devotee, and dhunoti shamalam Krishna, all the contamination of lust, envy, pride, greed, anger will be completely washed away by inviting Krishna into our hearts by hearing Krishna's stories, Srimad Bhagavatam. So nothing is more important than engaging in bhakti yoga, and devotees association is one of the most important aspects of the practice of bhakti yoga. So in this way Krishna describes Aila Gita. So today we have discussed Bhikshu Gita, the song of Avanti Brahmana, and Aila Gita, the song of Pururava, who was frustrated with his lusty affairs with Urvasi. And we have also described the qualities of modes of material nature. We have described Sankhya, the enumeration and analysis of material elements. So tomorrow we will discuss from the 27th chapter, that is Deity Worship. So thank you all very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.